Teaching ELL students is a privilege and a joy. Is it easy? No way. But with the right support, you can feel empowered to tackle each day with ease and confidence. I'm your host, Beth Boucher, founder of Inspiring Young Learners. With over 10 years of teaching both nationally and internationally, I know what it takes to ensure that your ELL students have what they need to thrive today, tomorrow, and for life. I'm on a mission to empower you to equip your English language learners. Welcome to Equipping ELLs. Let's get to today's episode. Well, hey there, Natalie and Jesse. Thank you so much for being on the show. I am so, so excited to have you both here today.
We are excited to be here. Thanks, Beth.
Now, Natalie and Jesse are two incredible educators who I've had the opportunity to meet and been a part of their cadres and some of the work that they've been doing in their consortium. So let's start there. Tell us a little bit about each of yourselves, your educational background, what you're doing now, and all of that good stuff.
Sure, I can start. My name is Natalie Briscoe, and I am an educator in Southwest Kansas, former secondary teacher, and worked a lot with CTE and that kind of thing. Also had the privilege of teaching English to students for about 4 years, kind of on a private one-on-one, some English work on acquiring their English. So I have a heart for these students and the asset that they are working to acquire. I have been a consultant for about 3 years now and have enjoyed seeing kind of a different side of education and having the opportunity to see how different schools work and what works best in different places. I feel like I've learned a lot in this position.
Hello, everybody. I'm Jesse Floyd, and I am also from Southwest Kansas. I was a classroom teacher for 16 years, mostly in the middle level and upper elementary. So middle school weirdos, you're my people. Love those middle schoolers and that time in their life where they are just so weird. And I always have my will to be weird is always on the 10. So it's cool. I worked in small schools mostly during my time in the classroom. And so social studies was my content area. But, you know, you do lots of things as, you know, when you're in rural schools or any school for that matter. And so seeing kids from all different backgrounds and trying to bring them content in all different areas is something that I'm familiar with. I learned a lot about providing effective support and instruction to English learners based on what I didn't do for my kids. And so, you know, I have that teacher guilt that I carry with me now as a consultant. I know so much more. And my number one goal is really just to bring teachers as much information as I can to help educate them, support them in what they're doing, following up and then like nurturing their skills and their ability to scaffold and to best support their English learners, because it's truly a passion I have. My heart is in that place. And as a consultant, meeting lots of different teachers, visiting so many different schools, it's a huge learning experience for me. I love the people. I love the families and the kids. And it's really exciting to see what amazing things teachers and administrators are doing to support their bilingual and multilingual students and families.
Awesome. Well, welcome so much, Natalie and Jesse. I'm so glad that you're here. And a big part of why I wanted to have you on is because what you both are doing as consultants with a consortium is really unique and I had never heard of it before. And so I think there's other listeners out there that, you know, sometimes we just get so honed in and focused on how our school does something, or this is the only way. And I think you both bring a really unique perspective because you are able to work with multiple different schools, different districts, and really see what is happening across many different grade levels and schools and seeing what's working and how teachers are really and administrators are showing up to really support their English language learners. So before we dive into that, which I'm super excited for, I would love for you both to share a little bit more about what is the consortium? How did this come about? Any tips for maybe some who are listening and wondering if that's something that is available in their state? Why don't you dive into that a little bit?
Sure. Our consortium has been around longer than we have, as far as, so definitely not unique to us as in something that we've created. But kind of the purpose is with Title III federal funding, if schools don't generate enough as a standalone district, then they are part of a consortium so that they can pool the funds together and get resources, especially to our small rural schools, make sure everybody has access to good, solid instructional practices and resources that can help their students. I think it's so important because sometimes our larger districts have a pool of money that they can really focus and get the resources needed to help those students. Whereas our smaller districts sometimes feel a little bit like their hands are tied because they don't have the same access. And so it kind of helps improve access for our teachers that help that then therefore improves access for our students as well. So that's kind of the concept as far as the money part goes. We pool it together and then we provide trainings and cadres and resources to the group as a whole because together they can access more than had they been standalone. Districts, Jesse, do you want to add to that?
That was fantastic.
That was absolutely. And I think that's the key point there is together they can do more than standalone. And I think that that's really something that, you know, hopefully that can be a shift we see across all schools and districts as we all try to do our best to meet the needs of English language learners, seeing the beauty in collaboration and working together. And I'm sure you've seen that in your cadres. Why don't you share a little bit about what those are?
So our cadres are an opportunity for teachers that have any contact or interest in supporting their emergent bilinguals or their multilingual learning students better in the classroom or in their school programs, in their Title III programs or ESOL programs. They can come together and network with other professionals that are in the same situation, that are wanting to see what resources are out there, what programming other districts are doing, how they're able to utilize staff, how they're able to utilize awesome programs like Equipping Els. And anything from inspiring young learners, we talk about it. We reflect on how it's been really impactful for students and teachers and support staff. We inform them on the latest updates, if there's anything new in Title III or ESOL that they need to know about. We try to be very mindful about when we have our cadre meetings so that they can utilize that information in real time, and they can get back into their classrooms or into their program where they have other teachers that are helping to facilitate and helping to implement their program with the latest and greatest ideas. And we really enjoy the cadres because we've got to know on a much deeper level so many of these educators, and we get to see them as a part of our consortium membership districts. So we visit them throughout the year. We're in constant contact with them, but also the other districts that have traveled to the cadres to also network and benefit and learn more about the best practices and effective instruction. It's just been so wonderful opening up the horizons to, you know, have so many more people contributing to ideas and what we know and support for each other. It's one of our, you know, favorite things to do.
And how do you feel like that networking piece has really helped those teachers be more successful in the classroom and with their English language learners?
You know, when we have our cadres, we bring some content and we bring some best practice and guest speakers sometimes and those kinds of things. But we also consistently get feedback that their favorite time is the time to collaborate with one another. And I think being able to talk to other professionals that have a heart and have the same job is just so valuable to be able to say, hey, this is working really well for me, or I'm having this issue. How do you handle it? I think everybody feeds off of that and grows when you're able to hear from others. So certainly not like we are the only experts in the room. Far from that. We learn from the people that are there. Our small schools, many times there, it's one person in the entire district that's kind of in charge of running this ESOL program. And so when they have an opportunity to collaborate with others, great ideas are formed. We have had some opportunities for teachers to create resources that they've shared with each other, as far as some quick guides for what are some quick instructional strategies that we can support emerging ELs all the way to nearly proficient ELs, and what are the best ways to support them. And that all comes from that collaboration and the opportunity to talk to one another. I know that Jesse and I both have a huge heart for rural school districts, because so often they're on an island by themselves. Yeah. They're the one and only. And so to be able to get them together to where they feel like they have a team, mm-hmm. Is so, so valuable, and definitely heart that we have. We also, though, get some larger school districts that come to our cadres. And so we're able to glean information from them as well. And they can get ideas from some of our smaller schools. It's really a neat opportunity to hear from all sizes. And sometimes something works really well for all of those schools. And then sometimes it's more specific, and we might break up by school size for what works, if that makes sense.
My favorite thing about all of that, I'm so glad that you were, you know, talking about getting everyone together and all those ideas, because I think creating that community for those professionals has been the most exciting part. We can facilitate a conversation. We can ask some questions that, you know, perhaps they're all thinking, but maybe haven't asked, and the conversation start. And then all of a sudden you can physically see them connect, and then they're getting each other's email addresses, and we're on, you know, it's a wonderful thing to get people together and to have so much partnering for the benefit of improving our instruction for our English learners.
And I love that you prioritize that and see the need for that, because I think, you know, I've gone deep diving in co-teaching and all of this stuff as I've been doing a few different podcast episodes on collaboration and the success of that. And it seems to be like, obviously, yes, this works when teachers can talk, and yet no one really gives them time to talk. So I love that that is a priority, and you're seeing them. That's really one of the most beneficial times, is when teachers can just have that freedom during the school day to talk and collaborate, to learn from each other. And we know that every group of ELL students is really different. So it's really cool to see how ideas can then pan out in different ways, depending on the size of the class or the school or the language level. But those core, you know, traits are there of what's quality and what makes a good program. So let's move into that. I would love if each of you wanted to share one or two things that you have seen really are what you're seeing as best practices, really are really making a big impact when it comes to teachers successfully supporting their English language learners.
Well, one of the things that I've seen lately, and I think the particular schools that I'm thinking about that are doing this really have gone through a transformation of acknowledging the diversity in their culture and embracing that, and really highlighting the strengths of all the different groups that are a part of that school. And that is so exciting, because then I can see evidence of that walking through the hallways, because there's all sorts of different communication that's posted in different languages or that's visually communicated. Many more teachers are using visual agendas. They are incorporating as much of the L1 as they can at those instructional levels, so that they're growing the first language, and then also focusing on like a language objective. One particular school I can think of, the teacher, and again, we all know that this is a lot of work and it's not easy, and we don't always like celebrate the amount of effort and work that goes into it. But when I see this particular classroom and the teacher has read some passages and then had their district translator translate that as well, and then include some pictures so that the students can go from the whole group instruction with effective EL methods and strategies, EL support strategies, and then going back and allowing those students to go to like a listening center, especially if they're on a lower language level, proficiency level. And I mean, it's just so supportive in the fact that this teacher has, and not even just this teacher, but the school, I feel like, has gone to a lot of different lengths to make that content accessible to the student, and for that student to be able to communicate what they know already and what they've learned, you know, provided lots of opportunities and tools and methods to do that so that a student actually has that autonomy. They can choose, well, okay, I want to do a talk to text for my answer, knowing it will translate using this technology, or I'm going to draw a picture. I mean, it's just, it's so wonderful to me because there's not the feeling that that student's not being fully included, but there's also not the feeling that that the teacher has been alone, and because the school as a whole is showing evidence that they are all supporting that entire process. So I don't know that that's a specific strategy I can share, but I think there's a few things in there that are really, really impactful. And I feel like makes a huge difference when you walk in the door, it's almost immediately noticed. And it's just exciting. I wish, you know, I want to share those ideas with every school. And I try to. It's like word vomit. I come out to the schools and I'm like, oh, what are you seeing? And I'm like, wow. You know, and the whole spiel starts. And so I'm hoping that those ideas and those strategies and intentional practices are catching on, and that more schools begin to try with some of those things. I think it really helps to build their school communities that way.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, you hit on so many important things that we've seen over and over, of just that creating that welcoming environment, you know, having things on the walls, whether it's pictures or, you know, things in their native language, just representing that first and foremost. And then, you know, I love those examples you gave of in the classroom with the teachers, how they're meshing the scaffolds and the supports and technology into lessons. And that's happening at a school level. And I think that that's, you know, hopefully where we're getting, I know many listeners are hoping we're getting there as well, where it's not just on the shoulders of the ESL teacher to be doing the scaffolds and supports, because that's where it is exhausting and teachers are getting burnt out when they are doing that for many, many students on their caseload. And so that's really encouraging to hear that you're starting to see schools where, as a school, it's becoming the norm of and knowing, and I think we all understand, and anybody who's done this for a while knows, the more you learn how to scaffold, the easier it becomes. And so, you know, think of that school this year and think of where next year they're already going to have that foundation that they have set, and how they're going to be able to, you know, more quickly scaffold and know how to support their students. So that's really exciting to kind of look ahead and know where these schools are going, of those who are all in and getting it and working together. So I love that example. Thanks.
Jesse definitely hit the nail on the head as far as I think it starts with mindset. And I think it starts with the idea that these students are acquiring an additional asset.
Mm-hmm.
They are not deficient, and not focusing on what they can't do, but what they're working to acquire in addition to the other skills that they already have. A skill that I don't have. I am not bilingual. I wish I was. but it's I think it starts with that mindset. And when you have a school system, a school culture that adopts that mindset, there's so much that can happen in that alone. Recognizing what these students bring to the table and the asset that they're working to acquire, and how marketable they're going to be when they leave school because they know more than one language, sometimes three and four. So I definitely think that's like the number one thing, and something we are always talking about. And sometimes teachers like to see immediate results. We want to see, because we want our students to show growth, and we want good things for them. And so sometimes it can be tempting to want to rush the process or for acquiring language. And I think sometimes teachers need to hear, you're doing it. You're enough. Mm-hmm. You're enough. You're doing it. If your mindset is in the right place and you're incorporating some of these best practices that we've talked about, one of them that and Jesse's heard me talk, one of my favorites right now, I guess, is TPR, and really increasing that vocabulary understanding and how powerful that can be for not just our students that are learning English, but all kinds of students. I mean, that's one of the reasons I love it is because it's powerful for the students, but also not super labor intensive for the teacher. Yeah. It's a simple thing that you can can take the time to incorporate, and it can be really powerful. But again, I think it has to start with that mindset. And then a lot of the things fall into place. That's just one of them recently that I'm like, oh, this is so easy for you to incorporate. And even let the kids, I mean, the idea is let the kids come up with it. They have fun with it. Mm-hmm. And I was recently working with a group of paraprofessionals. We were talking about PPR, and one of them was like, oh my gosh, there's a teacher in my school that does this. And I didn't know there was like a reason. And so people buy in when they realize there's like a reason to do this. I think that most teachers desperately want to do what's best for their students.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes the reason they don't is because they just don't know.
Yeah.
And so I think professional development is so important because when we know better, we do better. And there are so many things that, and Jesse alluded to this earlier, as a consultant, oh man, I wish I would have had a better grasp on that when I was in the classroom. I could have done better by my students because I desperately wanted to help them. But sometimes I did things well, and sometimes I didn't know some of the things that it was like, oh, I could have done that easily. And I don't know, I guess, I mean, yes, we can definitely talk about different strategies, and they are so important. But I think if you don't have the right mindset around it, then it's all for naught.
Meeting with teachers and doing coaching and mentoring, like both Natalie and I do as well, you know, that's a lot of that first step is establishing that relationship, is kind of seeing what we both know, right? And what we need to know, or what are we, the direction that we want to support, or that we want to provide that support for that teacher, has everything to do with where they're at. We have to meet them where they're at. And that's the same thing with our students. So we can truly assess what they need and then assess ourselves. Like, do I have the tools and do I have the skills to support you? And then have that, you're going to lay it out there on the line, right? And say, I don't have those skills and I don't have that knowledge. And that's really tough. But to be able to ask for that help and then accept it and be able to implement and reflect on how you're doing that and have some feedback. I mean, you know, applying a lot of those things that we need to do for our students every single day, every single time we interact with them. I mean, that's the same with our teachers. And that's so enriching to me personally, being able to establish that relationship and then say, well, what do we need? What do we both need? And how can we help you? So I think another part of our collaboration with districts and teachers is we build that relationship. We talk about the mindset, we talk about what their reality is like, and then start to build that relationship both ways by answering questions and asking them, and then truly, you know, seeing that human being for what they need so that they can be the best for their students.
Yeah, it's really fascinating to see how really we need to approach teaching each other and teaching teachers just like we approach our ELL students, of creating that welcoming space. I mean, there's so much vulnerability in a teacher saying, I need help with this, I don't know what to do. Just like our students, when they learn a language, there's a lot of vulnerability. So there's so many things that can apply, you know, whether we're working with teachers or the students. But why don't we move into that? Why don't you share a little bit? So for those who are listening, I'm hoping this is sparking some ideas of what you could do, whether that is seeing if you have a consortium in your area, or seeing if you can create some sort of district cadre where you can get together for a day and get some PD training or just collaboration time. I encouraged my listeners at the beginning of the year for their word to be this year, advocate. So really advocating for what they need. And I think that's a great one. Even an afternoon where you can have, you know, plan time with your homeroom teachers you work with, whatever it might be. What you also made me think of, Jesse, is some of our listeners might be mentoring other teachers or might be coaching homeroom teachers. So what advice do you both have on just that, you know, of any of that? How can you maybe start up and advocate for the needs of getting more professional development, or, you know, just advice on coaching or mentoring other teachers?
Sometimes as teachers, we feel like we are alone and we kind of circle the drain in times where we're very overwhelmed or mm-hmm. not feeling the support or the leadership that we, you know, would envision to exist in our school or our classrooms. So I think the first thing for advocating is just acknowledging that you, and you said this earlier, that you have vulnerabilities, right? Like that you need some things. And part of that vulnerability is also accepting the help and the reaching out part to other teachers that might or most likely feel the same way. And I mm-hmm. think that's kind of what we were talking about earlier. It's so great to see teachers go, oh my gosh, me too. We have as well, or yeah. here's how we address this problem. And then the foot's on the gas pedal, right? They're like off to the races. They are, you know, sharing ideas and with each other and having that collective effort and that collective experience and using that to say, well, here's what we need and here's what we don't have. Mm-hmm. And then being able to say, and taking the risk of saying, hey, admin, could we please learn more about this? Could we mm-hmm. please have this support? Here's why, you know, and then take it back to here's the student and this is what the student is experiencing. Here's how I've been dealing with it, but I don't feel like that's sufficient enough, you know, and being able to just be very truthful and open and transparent about what is needed and having those folks, those teacher friends, those colleagues of ours that are like our family together mm-hmm. and saying the same things. This is what I'm seeing in my room. This is what I'm seeing in my room. And, you know, just going at it from an approach of we all need this. And when we all have it and we can all be on the same page,
yeah.
think of the deep impact we'll have on our students and families.
Oh, absolutely. I love that. Thanks so much.
I completely agree with Jesse. And I love that your word is advocate. And we talk a lot about advocating for our students, but I love the idea of also advocating for ourselves. Like, I want to do what's best for these kids, but I need some training and support. And I promise I'll hit the ground running when I have it. I think consortiums, they work a little bit differently, but anybody can put together a cadre, right? Like anybody mm-hmm. can say, let's find a place to meet. And I do believe that administration, most of the time,
yeah.
is going to be supportive of, I want to do what's best for my students. Can I bring some people together so that we can collaborate and talk about what's working and what's not? When possible, they're going to be supportive of that. Sometimes we don't get what we don't ask for. Yeah. And so I think that's important, you know, just reaching out to your area schools and saying, hey, who might be interested in getting together? And maybe you just start with a morning, one half day morning, and then go from there. And everybody come with, you know, their best ideas and some of the things that they would like some help in. Or maybe Jesse talked about sharing email addresses and just being able to sometimes to hear that other people are in that same space of trying to figure it out and then share resources like you have, Beth. I mean, you've got some incredible resources and sometimes it's as simple as, hey, I found this wonderful resource. Let me send you the information. This has been very helpful to me, or here's how I took it and I tweaked it to meet my needs and this, mm-hmm. the needs of students. And just so important. But I think most teachers want to do what's best for their kids, most administrators want to do what's best for their teachers. They don't always know what's possible or what might work.
Totally. And partnering, you know, like we partner together all the time. And so if an administrator with their millions of things in their mind and the things that mm-hmm. they deal with, if they're aware that there's a group that wants to, you know, get their hands dirty and start really working towards these solutions. I agree with Natalie. I think that there's only good things that can come from that.
Yeah. Yes. And I think that's such a great reminder, especially this time of the year, you know, teachers are getting tired. And I think sometimes we forget to assume the best intent of administrators or, you know, other teachers. And I think if you're listening and you just feel encouraged, take that first step. Find that solution. And, you know, if you do a lot of the work of just figuring out what this looks like, and it might be something small, this year, and maybe next year it can turn into something bigger. I mean, it's so incredible to see just how a small idea can turn into something so much greater than what we ever think. So we just want to encourage those who are listening to take a step and, you know, don't be afraid to ask your administrators and get the support you need. So Natalie and Jesse, I cannot thank you enough for joining me today. This was so incredibly helpful to get your wisdom and for you to share that with our listeners. So thank you so much. And we wish you both all the best on your consulting and everything, all the work you're doing in your consortium.
Thank you so much, Beth. You have been an incredible resource for us and helped our teachers by providing resources and your wealth of knowledge. We are so thankful for you as well.
Absolutely. Anytime someone is looking for programming or support, I mean, the coaching that they can receive from Beth and her team, the resources, it's not just something that you pay for and then you never see the human behind it. The human element is in every single bit, and you know, you can just feel that it's been made with love and careful consideration and all the best intentions. So I completely appreciate you, Beth, and thanks again for giving the opportunity for us to come on your podcast.
Absolutely. And I think if that's the biggest thing here is the partnerships that happen, you know, meeting other people around the country, around the world that are passionate about supporting English language learners is such a gift. So thank you both. And thank you everybody for listening to this episode.
Thank you for joining me in today's episode. All links and resources mentioned can be found in the show notes. If you're looking for even more support and done-for-you resources created specifically for the needs of ELLs, head to inspiringyounglearners.com. I'll catch you here next week. Until then, take that next step to keep equipping your ELLs.